This is Mirko Čolak, and you're listening to Spoiler Country.
Hey, hey, people of Earth, it's time to enter the Spoilerverse via our secret portal at the exclusive Arctic Club in beautiful downtown Seattle with our hosts, John and Kenrick and Jeff. Welcome to Spoiler Country.
Hey, if you're listening to our show for the first time and you're on one of the social medias that we're on, like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, any of those kinds of things, you should always check us out on SpoilerVerse.com. But if you want to keep up with our latest episodes, you should bring out your smartphone, get into your favorite podcatcher, find Spoiler Country, and hit subscribe. Then you'll get all our new stuff.
And if you want to reach out to us, you can do that in two ways. You can call us, leave us a voicemail at 707-656-2080. Again, 707-656-2080. Or you can shoot us an email at spoilercountry@gmail.com.
Join the cult of the Spoilerverse and welcome back to Spoiler Country. I'm Johnny Horsley. And today on the show, well, it's Mirko Čolak, and Jeff got a chance to sit down and talk with him. If you don't know who that is, because I didn't know who it is until Jeff told me, look him up, man. The guy is a fantastic artist, been around for a little bit, done some great stuff. We're doing Conan, X-Men, Unholy Grail, Red Sonja. His art is incredibly detailed, and definitely worth yourself to check it out. Look up his Bizarro drawing he did. It's pretty fantastic. But enough of me rambling here. Let's go ahead and sit back and listen to Mirko Čolak and Jeff chat in their own words.
Hi, welcome to Spoiler Country. Today we have the phenomenal artist, Mirko Čolak. Pleasure to speak with you, sir.
Pleasure is mine.
It definitely is fantastic. You're definitely seems like you're one of the harder artists right now going around. Everyone's talking about you.
I hope so. I hope so, really. And thank you. I'm doing my best. That's my job.
So what? Where are you right now? You're not in the United States. What country are you actually from right now?
You know, it's somehow difficult to explain. But if you ever heard of the former Yugoslavia,
yeah,
I'm in Serbia, which is a part of the former Yugoslavia. Basically located near Croatia and Bosnia.
Oh wow! How is it over there, especially with COVID going around? Are you guys noticing it or no?
Oh, we are free now. We are free now. We were locked down like 2 months, but now we are free.
Oh wow! That must be extremely impressive. We're still locked down in the United States right now. We've been locked down for the most part for several months.
Yeah, I know. I have a lot of friends there, so I know.
Yeah. So did your country? How long were you guys in lockdown for? Oh wow! Okay. And yeah. Are you still doing social distancing or no?
Oh, absolutely. It was like we have a curfew here, which basically means that we had like only a few hours available for walking, you know, to buy something, you know. So the curfew was pretty drastic, but we had like maybe 100 casualties, which is, you know, pretty small number, if you agree.
Oh, wow. Yeah. In the United States, we just hit 105,000.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no, but you have 300 million, right?
We do have 350 million, and right now it's about 105,000 dead and about 2 million cases.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's kind of, yeah, Serbia apparently did it better.
Yeah, it looks like that, yeah.
So how did it impact your career at all? Like, were your pencils down or were you working throughout?
Well, you know, recently I changed everything I had in my mind. What I mean by that, so far I was working on Cintiq, you know, digitally, but I was sick and tired of PC, Windows, laptops, and now I change everything to iOS and I'm working directly on iPad. So first what I did, usually I don't have the pencil face, to be honest. I have only Sketch, and after that I jumped directly to. So basically, for the editors, that's the way of work. It's very strange to him, you know, because, you know, pencil stage for me is just, you know, Look, I'm feeling like I'm working two jobs at the same time, painting and pencilling. So for me, it's the best way to not just sketch panels or pages, and then you know, jump go directly to the ink. So that's the my process. But
yeah,
every single man is different. So
So while the crisis was happening, were you told not to work, or were you working straight through?
Well, unfortunately, I'm one of the guys coronavirus relied like vacation. I mean, really didn't work, nothing special during those 2 months. But to be honest, I did like 12 pages for Todd.
Oh, wow.
And everything went very good. Todd liked the pages. And for me, that's the, you know, the most important in the last 2 months. So, you know, you have to know, and I have to admit that, you know, I'm very proud to work with Todd, because that's the top of the world, baby.
Well, yeah, you're basically working for one of the living legends of the industry right now.
Yeah, I would say guru, guru of the comics. Guru of the comic industry, yeah.
Exactly. So I bet a lot of our listeners are probably wondering, what is the comic scene like in Serbia?
Oh, well, we had a very strong comic scene back in the 90s, before the war, before the Yugoslavia is part of, because before the Yugoslavia went down. So I would say we had like a third place in Europe, according to comic. We had a third place in the Europe after Italy and after France. So we had a very strong scene, but you know, after the war and after the all shit happened, now you can't live working as a comic artist here in Serbia. So you're forced to work somewhere else, like France, like America, and that's it. I mean, it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah. So comic books just are not making it to the country anymore, or is it blocked, or?
Can you say it again?
You said you can't work in comic books in Serbia. Is the industry not making it, not penetrating into your country, or is it being like blocked for censorship?
No, I think you know, you have to understand first one thing. We slept 20 years. What I mean by that, you know, when you have a war in your country, you can't think about the comics. You have to think about milk. You have to think about bread.
Yeah.
You know, I always trying to thinking about what would happen that the war didn't happen.
Yeah.
Probably former Yugoslavia would be the, I think, a very strong comic market. But unfortunately, after the war, all the other countries like Croatia, Macedonia, Slovenia, and Serbia also, we are now just a small part of nothing, basically. if you can imagine, you know, how big is Serbia? It's like, it's smaller than New York.
Oh, wow.
I think that New York has like 8 million, right?
You're probably, sounds about right.
So Serbia has seven and a half.
Oh, wow. Now, yeah, I mean, I can't imagine what it was like living through a war. I mean, luckily, in this country, it's been a while since we've had one on our soil. I can't imagine what that must have been like. It must have been horrifying.
Well, to be honest, Serbia wasn't directly in the war, because on our soil. But we went to the war in Croatia and Bosnia, because some crazy people think that we had some part of our soil there in Croatia and Bosnia, which is totally wrong.
Yeah,
and it was hard, you know. But for me personally, I was a kid, you know. I didn't have a chance. Fortunately, I didn't have a chance to meet the war. So, but I think when the NATO bombing Serbia, that was a terrifying. Yes, that was a terrifying experience. Can you imagine airplanes above your town, you know, throwing out the bombs? Which is, I don't know. God help.
I was going to say, I mean, I think it's one of the people talk sometimes about privilege. And I do think a privilege of being in the country is that I've never had to think about stuff like that or imagine what that would like to live through. And I can't imagine anyone having to. So, yeah, I'll say that that's something I probably have never even considered.
Yeah, I know. You know, the things like war for me and for any normal people is just the the worst thing that could happen. You know, I think it's totally wrong. You know better than me. Like right now, you have a problem there in America. We know with George Floyd, right?
Yep, that's happening. Happening right now. Yep.
And for us here in Serbia, in Europe, basically that's an impossible situation. You know, to have the black guy do anything. You know, and then you have a white guy. Oh, can we change the subject?
No. I'll be more than happy to change the subject. So, I guess my next question was going to be about when did you know you were going to pursue a career in comic books?
Oh, and when I was a kid, like 7 years old or something, you know, back in the days in the former Yugoslavia, back in the 80s, the comics were very, very popular. Every single boy or even single girl read the comic. So I was the first class of the elementary school, and my teacher asked me, what you want to be when you grow up? I said, I will be the comic artist. And back in the days, it was a normal answer.
Yeah.
And basically, when I was a seven years old kid, I knew what will be my job. From now on, from 10 to now, I'm just thinking about the comics, and I'm just thinking how to improve myself, my work. And right now, it looks like I'm right, you know, because I'm working with the Todd, which is, you know, creme de la creme. That's it. There is nothing special. Nothing special, really, this time.
Now, which comics were you reading as a kid, like specific ones that do you still remember?
Yeah, of course. Because my country, Serbia, is located very, very close to Italy. Basically, I read only Italian comics. A bit later, when I was like 15 or something, I read the French comics, and when I was like 18, maybe 19, I started to read American comics like Spider-Man, Thor, Wolverine. And later, I discovered DC Comics. I discovered Vertigo.
Oh, yes.
And I always dreamed about to work with Vertigo, and I had a chance, and I did one issue with William Dennis, who was my editor. Saucer Country or something, I forgot the name. But then Vertigo closed the offices, and the story is over, unfortunately.
I'm sorry to hear, but Vertigo has always been one of my favorite imprints. I mean, you had Sandman, 100 Bullets, Fables. They were some fantastic titles.
Yeah, me too. I'm in love with the Vertigo, especially the 100 Bullets. And after all this time, I learned a lot from Rizzo. And I finally got a chance to meet him, you know, a couple times already, Eduardo. And he's just fantastic artist, great man. I love him.
Now you've written, you've drawn comic books for France as well, and obviously American. Is there a significant difference between the art styles and like the tone for, let's say, France versus United States comics versus ones you have had in Serbia? Or they pretty much follow a similar style and pattern and whatnot?
Oh, it's totally different. Trust me. French comics is basically, they imagine the comics like a movie, you know, and they constantly insist to draw everything. Basically, the French panels are more wider.
Okay.
The camera is more far away from the action. In American comics, the next story I will tell you is really true. I remember I was working for Marvel. Just forgot the name of the title, but it doesn't matter. I had to draw the Detroit, you know, and I drew everything. I mean, every single window, every single building, every single house, everything.
Yeah.
And my pal, my editor, Dan, said to me, "Oh, Mirko, that's great, but for what fucking reason you drew every single window in that building?" You know, that's the main reason. That's the main reason between the French and the American comics. In America, you know, in American comics, you have to be prepared to draw a lot of talking heads because of the characters. I mean, I want to say it's more, everything is more about the fix in American comics, if of course, in action. So, but for that, you don't need the buildings and the cars and the airlines, of course. That's the difference, you know.
That's cool.
You know, in the French comics, the format is different. You know, you have 48 pages in one book, and they look very luxury. Really, it looks like a real book. And it's pretty expensive. It's about 13 euros, which is like $15 or $16. So it's pretty expensive, you know. And the biggest difference, like I said, everything is about the camera. Camera is much closer in American comics than in French.
So for an artist, which is more interesting for you, the French version or the American version?
Oh, American, definitely. Definitely, because, you know, I'm kind of used already. Back in the days, you know, my answer was probably I like the French, but if you ask me now, I definitely have to choose. I have to choose American comics because, like I said, I'm used to it already after all these years.
So which artist you think influenced you the most in either style, French or American style?
Oh, that answer is very easy for me because I don't know. Have you ever heard for the French comic artist Jean Giraud Mebius?
Honestly, I will admit that I do not. What was he known for, if you don't mind?
Basically, the most popular title he did is Lieutenant Blueberry and Inco. He also did ten issues of Silver Surfer back in the 90s.
Okay.
If you just type in his name in Google, you will see who is the master. he was just in America. John Buscema or Buscema, whatever you call him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is Buscema or Buscema? Or
either one is probably sounds better than what I would come up with, so I'll go with yes on both, because I'm not sure. Like I know the name when I see it, but I'm horrible with names, so the fact that you even came what sounds like is correct is probably better than what I came up with.
Yeah. Also, Eduardo Rizzo is one of the guys I like a lot, and yep. He's art in 100 Bullets. And later he had, like, I forgot the name of the title, something according to Moonshine or something.
Okay. I'll look it up. But I'm gonna say the French name that you came up with, if you could at some point just send me the spelling of it and I'll look it up later because I'm definitely curious. I just obviously horrible spelling names is just as bad as I am with pronouncing them.
No problem. He was an amazing artist, man. He died like 4 years ago. Oh. I met him twice in Paris, and he was really, really my master, definitely.
Well, like I said, please show me, send me over the name. I would love to look up the information on that. I'll post some of the images.
You will be blown away.
Well, now I'll be blown away with what you're doing with your work.
Oh, really?
I mean, I actually was looking up your issues that you worked on Red Sonja, and they were brilliant. You have a brilliant style.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you. That's the fact because, you know, I don't here in Serbia. When I was a kid, the Conan was one of my favorite characters, not just mine.
Yeah,
everybody loves him, you know. And the Sonja is like the woman comic, you know. The Red Sonja is just like a woman who has like a similar character like a Conan. And for me, that world is very, very well known. So it was like pretty much easy for me to work on the Red Sonja.
And I thought the pages you did, like I said, they were fantastic. They had a very lushness to them. They had, you could, you know, the battles had, you could feel the scope of it, and it didn't feel at all cluttered. Because sometimes some pages, you can tell an artist sometimes can clutter the page and make it almost confusing. But yours is so clean looking, you can, you know, you feel it. And I thought that was phenomenal.
Oh, thank you, thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, really, I really, like I tell you, I really understand the whole atmosphere and the whole world around Sonja or around Conan. So for me, I know it's always a pleasure and an obligation to work on the title like a Red Sonja or like a Conan I did for Dark Horse back in the days. And I really understand what people want from me. And I mean, if you take a look at the Red Sonja now, what we have there, we have a big boobs, right?
Yeah,
we have a big ass, right?
Yeah,
and everything is just like that. You know, I thought maybe it's better idea to start to think about the Red Sonja like a normal woman, but with some serious skills. You know,
yeah.
That was the concept for me and for the Dynamite Comics. So I really enjoyed doing my work on Red Sonja, and hopefully, I will do more pages. And next year, something like that, I have some conversation with Nate Colby, which is who is the editor at Red Sonja. And probably next year, I will start to work again on Sonya. Definitely.
Now, when you stopped working on Sonya, was that because you got the position with McFarlane?
No. I never. I will never break any contract, or I'll never stop to work, no matter what. So the things we talked, I met him in New York last year during the New York Comic Con, and he approached to my table. He approached to my table, to my booth, and asked me, Miracle Kolak, is that you? I said, yeah, that's me. And he said to me, okay, cool, I'm Todd. Can you write me your email address here? At the first glance, I did not recognize him. And I was like, who is that guy?
Yeah.
I plan to say him, go back in line, man, and sketch it $30. So, but then I spotted the girl behind the Todd, and I was suspicious because the girl looked so nice. It was dressed like a princess.
Yeah,
I said to, who is that guy? I know him. Who is that guy? And I said something probably historical. I said to Todd, oh my gosh, you're Todd fucking McFarlane. And he said to me, yes, that's me. And later, at the beginning of the year, I think in January, he called me. We made an agreement. We made a deal. We had a nice chat. And since then, everything is, goes pretty well.
That must have been a nice phone call. After you gave him the email and the convention ended, did you ever think you were going to hear back from him, or were you confident that he was going to come back to you?
No, I was pretty confident because I'm an artist. I know how to read the people.
Yeah.
And he came to my booth. A real professional, like a real master of the comic book industry. And I don't know. Some movements, his movements made me think that I'm right. I'm the first pick on draft.
Yeah.
I was right. I was right because I think he had in mind that story like 2 years already his mind, but he didn't have a chance to find the real guy with the style he wants. So he saw some pages from me. I don't know even which one, but now I realize my style is definitely the right one for the story he wants.
Now, is it intimidating to be working for Todd McFarlane? Because once again, you're working with another, you're a great artist, and obviously McFarlane is a very famous artist. Does that make it more intimidating? Does it make it feel, is it more relaxed because he knows what you're going through? How does that work on your psyche, as it were?
Honestly, I don't know. I didn't even think about that. I mean, I never had a, problem with the famous guys because, he's just a regular guy, like, and but Todd is really, I don't know the Serbian Serbian word for this, he's a real professional guy, and he told me like, okay, Mirko, if you don't understand some situation, just draw anything, whatever you want, I will write around your panels. So I have full freedom here.
Cool.
And working with Todd is just an amazing experience. I'm so grateful.
Yeah, I must say I've never had the pleasure of interviewing him, unfortunately. But what is what's he like as a guy? Is he kind of is he kind of chilled? Does he have a temper? Like is he?
Oh, he's a very relaxed guy, a relaxed one. He's totally chill. In some point, I think I'm spoke with I'm speaking with the kid. Sometimes.
Yeah.
The other time, he was very professional, very serious about the project, and everything I put on my pages, he checked like five times. Mirko, can you move this? Put the glass on. I don't know. I mean, he's a very, very for me and for my understanding, he's a great, great professional guy, but
now,
very busy.
I bet he, he's got the toys, he's got his own comics with Spawn, he's working with you.
Yep.
Now, in creating the story, how collaborative is it? Do you have some say in the direction of the story, or are you working off like a full script or plot? How's that? What's the system with between you two?
Todd prefer to write first the 12 pages, and after I finish those 12 pages, he will write again the new 12. So that does the that's the how he works. And for me, it's the same situation. Even if I work on 5 pages or 10 pages or 12 pages, it doesn't matter for me. So, but basically, what is the difference here? You know, the comic script is it's like a movie script. So, but Todd, different approach here, and he writes a plot like he writes a let's say like a TV show, because I think that he has some plans for the TV shows, and okay. You know, it looks like a book. He describes on the page what's happening. There is no panel one, panel two, panel three, panel four. There is a bunch of the words, and I have to, you know, understand what is most important here and to put on the page. Whatever, five panels, two panels, double spread or whatever. And in fact, it works fantastic for me. I understand better what is important on the page, and like I said, for me, it's a better way to work on the comic.
Now, what you're working on with Todd, is it a graphic novel? Is it a miniseries? Is it going to be ongoing?
Hopefully, it will be ongoing.
Oh wow! Okay.
I can tell you, you know, so much, but the story is they had a very famous, very rich father who was a fashion guru back in the 70s. And basically this story will, you know, it's kind of parody between superheroes and the regular people. And okay. It's crazy. Really, it's crazy. Four sons, like I said, those four sons had a very rich, very famous father who died, and he left the company to the sons, right? But
yeah,
those four sons hate each other.
Of course.
Yeah, and because of that, they will become a recognizable like superheroes because of their clothes they wear. They will have a clothes like back in the 70s, so, you know, okay. Long sleeves, a lot of flowers on the t-shirts.
Like, is it like disco?
Yeah,
the disco era,
like a freaking disco era. Yes, and they will not have any superpower, but they will be recognizable, like I said, because of their clothes.
So you said it's a parody.
Almost, not exactly, but almost. I mean, we will not cracking jokes about the superheroes or about Batman, about, you know, but it will be totally different to see four guys in a funny clothes, you know,
yeah.
In the present day in New York,
yeah,
you know, with no power, and they will be recognizable just because of that, you know.
So, they
walk around like a madman, you know. That's basically the core of the story.
So
those four sons.
So stylistically, it sounds it's going to be quite different than what Todd does with Spawn. So it's going to be almost like a complete opposite tone wise.
I'm not so sure. I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, on this story, I had to change my artistic style. Not so much. It will be recognizable. That's obviously me, but Todd asked me to work with the cleaner line, you know. I said to him, what do you mean cleaner line? I mean, have you ever seen the red coin? That's the clean line. He said to me, even more cleaner, whatever that means. So the style in this book will be a bit different, but again, I'm back into my roots, because I start my career with just lines, without any shadows, without any black spots, which is, you know, if you agree with me, the strongest discipline in this sport, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
If you can draw with just line, you know, that's something, you know, a million of artists try to avoid that. Someone famous said once, if you're in doubt, just put the black spot. You know, so basically I'm back to my roots, you know. I'm pretty comfortable with it so far.
Well, I will definitely say that from my interest, I usually prefer a cleaner pan, a bit, honestly. I feel sometimes you can get lost in the clutter of a lot of, you know, shading and everything like that. I prefer cleaner.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. With the shadow and the black spots, you can hide your, you know, your mistakes.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. But if you have a clean line, you know, there is no space for mistakes.
I always like talking to artists and figure out how they do approach their images. I mean, I'm a writer. Unfortunately, I can't draw for the life of me. I always wish I had, but never could. But as a writer, I always like hearing how artists do approach it and the philosophy behind their work. And I think that's interesting. The clean line is, I don't know if I ever thought that was considered it from the point of view of difficulty. And I guess I can see what you're saying. That's the more, maybe almost an honest, more honest drawing is the clean style.
Yeah, I think yes, because, you know, for example, if you know, I know how to explain that because I'm an artist, you're the writer. So, but when you have head, when you have to sketch the head, you know, and when you manage to sketch that head with just line, and that every single part of the face is on the right spot without any mistakes, that's success, you know. But with the shading, of course, you have to know how to shade the object. But like I said, if you made a mistake, it's always a good idea to put some shadow on that eye, because otherwise you will look very nasty or something like that. I don't know. The clean line is just, you know, I don't know. I don't want to sound rude or something like that, but the clean line is just showing that the artist who does the clean line is just confident to work on with the clean lines. Okay. For example, I told you about Eduardo Rizzo. He does everything with a lot of black shadows, but I like his work, you know. But I never would like to see those black spots on my pages, if you know what I mean.
No, I got you. I got you.
Yeah, that's the whole point.
So it almost sounds like, on some level, the cleaner style, there takes way more mastery of skill than it does. I guess you would say the other one.
Oh, no. The first one, absolutely. Because, you know, like I said, one mistake and the people will recognize the mistake. But with a lot of shadows, you can hide a lot of things. That's the truth, even if it hurts.
So when you're doing sending in your pages to Tug, obviously, you know, who's, you know, been around for a long time, is he, do you find that he's better at spotting the mistakes than a regular editor or a writer have been?
Oh, yeah, of course, because he's an artist, you know, and, but to be honest, so far I didn't have any problem with him because he has some no camera position or something, but for just an art, nothing. I mean, you know, I'm very serious about sketching my characters, because I learned a long time ago that every single brain has limitation, has his own edge, and if you want to sketch some realistic guy, okay, you can imagine something like 90% of that guy, how he's standing there or how he's sitting there, but those 10% you have to see if you want to be totally realistic with your art.
Okay.
If you know what I mean.
I think I do.
I would say basically, you can imagine 90% how some person stand in space, right?
Yes.
But those 10%, you have to see to sketch that guy exactly how he stands. So when I basically almost every single character in Red Sonja is me. Even Red Sonja is me.
Okay, that's
you
cool.
Know, you know what? If you see some realistic figure in the comics, you have to know that someone takes a model and make the art from that. So I take a lot of reference of me, of course. Of course, of me, and I never tried to work on something if I didn't see the pose. So, of course, that can help with the Marvel, because in Marvel, I mean, I can jump like a Spider-Man. You know, so I have to imagine how it looks. Yeah.
So, what you're doing with your art? Are you standing from a mirror? Or are you taking pictures of you in like selfies in different poses?
Yeah, I have some small studio here in my house and a few of tripods, and just put the camera there and just take some photos and put on my screen and then draw on the paper on an iPad.
I must ask then, how hysterical is it for you to find yourself posing in a Red Sonja pose? Like, do you ever find yourself just laughing at yourself? Because it just seems like, because obviously a girl, you know, in your story's posing, it's going to be obviously different than, you know, a guy would normally pose probably quite often. Do you find yourself just, you know, laughing at yourself quite often?
No, I think it's sexy. No. It's, you know, it's part of the job, you know. And I mean, if you know how to draw, it doesn't matter it is me or it is some girl, because, you know, it's basically what is different. Difference, I have no boobs.
Yeah.
Red Sonja have boobs. I have a bigger shoulder and, you know, Red Sonja have smaller shoulders. That's the only difference, you know, and longer legs. But the body is the body, so I think that's hilarious. When I said to the fans at the booth, New York, during the comic convention, "Are you like that, Red Sonja?" He said, "Oh yeah, it's amazing. She's beautiful, man. Oh, that's me. Thank you."
That's awesome. That probably just psyched him. He's like, "Oh man, I've been like staring at basically you for how many hours?"
Yeah.
Oh, poor confused soul now. Yeah. That's awesome. What you're gonna have to do is put on like those fake like boob strap or something, so you can cover those as well. You can do it completely.
I didn't hear it well. You said boobs or what?
No, put them on like fake strap ones, so it's, you can cover what they would look like when you're posing.
I can't hear you, man. Nothing now.
Oh, don't worry about it. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
All right. No, I was just joking around about if you were to have try to copy a look of the boobs themselves when you're doing Red Sonja. That's all. They have like those fake ones that they wear in like movies and stuff.
No. Straight from my head, man.
that was funny though. It at times like that, it must be, you might find the fascination of your job when you're doing those poses and think to yourself, this is what I do with my time.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Now, do you ever go through, because I know there are books on poses. Do you ever refer to those or do you do it directly with yourself?
No, I never. I tried a couple times, you know, to read the books about art, but basically it didn't help a lot because I had my approach very soon. And I realized that if I take a look at the man who's just sitting there and I just need to, you know, to catch just a few basic lines of his, let's say, pose, and that's it. I don't need to stare at him 1 hour, you know, to sketch, to make him look good in my art. And then, you know, I don't know. I always try to learn from the older guys, especially here in Europe. Like I said, I learned a lot from Romebius, and I learned a lot from the Sham or whatever.
Yeah.
But from the artistic books, no, almost nothing.
Now,
everything is set up like this. If you work enough, there's definitely no chance for you to make a fail. Why I said that? Because if you want something so strong, there is no chance. You know, imagine like this. If I want to work on the Conan again. Enough. I will work on the Conan. That's for sure. Everything depends on you. If you want to work, if you want to, you know, develop your style, your art, you have to sit back, relax, and to work. But you can go, you know, in the bar to drink the beers, the whiskey, and you know, spend time with the girls and do nothing. You know, the most important thing: sit back and relax and work. That's all I have to say, because I'm getting a lot of questions, you know. Oh, can I work for Marvel? And he has like 19 years old. He has like 19. I said, for Marvel, really? You only want to work for Marvel? That's amazing, man. I mean, when I had 19, I was like, oh, God help me to get any job, not for Marvel.
Yeah.
I'm getting lots of stupid questions over the Twitter, you know, about, oh man, can you help me? This can, but I can and I want to help. I help a lot of people, you know, so far. But I can help if you are a lazy bastard, you know, and you want, you know, and you want to catch the job or a gig over the night. It doesn't work like that.
Now, when you're separating those who are successful versus the artists who are not going to be successful, it really would, does come down to work ethic. I totally agree with you that, I mean, I do see a lot of people who are good artists, but they're just not doing anything really. And I'm just saying myself,
they are lazy bastards.
Yeah. Or, you know, they don't have a good, you know, the work ethic for as, you know, I've worked with some artists, you know, and they are just unprofessional. They don't turn out work, you know, at any level of speed or consistency. They don't, or they don't put the effort in into the work when they do something. They just try to like throw it together. I'm thinking to myself, that is the difference between someone who's going to be a professional and successful versus someone who's going to still be working, you know, begging for work because they're not putting that kind of effort in or professionalism to it.
Yeah, this is just a sport like a basketball, like a soccer, like a football, American rock. You know, if you put everything you have right now, 2 months later, 2 years later, 20 years later, you will be became someone, you know, definitely. Right now, I can tell you five names in Serbia who is better than me. But what's the problem? They're lazy bastards.
Yeah.
They're lazy bastards. You know, if I have deadlines, okay, I know, 10:10, I have to finish my issue. Okay, nothing else exists at the moment for me. Nothing. Just a job. I don't go at the local restaurants. I don't go to the bars. I don't go to the Irish pubs. No, nowhere. I'm staying at home. I am staying in my studio, and I work. I work like a man, you know. But you know, unfortunately, 95% of the people are not like me or like any other success. If you take a look carefully, right now, in this very moment, you have like 35, maybe 40 artists who have a work constantly.
Yeah.
Other than that, I don't know. The situation in the comic book industry now, it's only on the back of those 35 or 40 men.
Yeah.
That's good for us, of course, but it's bad for the comics, I think.
Yeah, and like I said, having put together a few, I mean, I'm obviously nowhere near your guys' levels, but I've done a few indie comic books, small market, obviously very small market, yeah. And I've worked with artists, and, you know, I'm paying artists, and like I said, I can see, and I get, you know, it's frustrating. You work with an art, and I mean, some of it I get to some extent, some I don't. Like, you'll be an artist, you know, you agree to a page, to a price per page, and, yeah, you know, and you agree to a certain amount of pages per month. And then, you know, after 2 or 3 months, there's like, you know, either they're complaining, you know, I want more pay than you agreed, or they're not going to put out the pages that you want. I'm saying to myself, there's a professional issue there. You know, once you make an agreement, you keep to it. Once you say a deadline, what you're going to complete, you follow through. And those are people who will be successful, who can do that.
I agree with you. Absolutely. Because, you know, if you promise something, okay, the page will be done for 10 days. There is no space or room for the 11 days. No, it will be. It must be on the 10th day or even the day before. I had one situation when I was younger, when I started to work with Marvel. It was back in 2010, I think. And I was scared. I was unprepared. I was, you know, and my first issue, I forgot the title. I forgot even the writer. It was a famous one.
Yeah.
Some Forces or something. Like, doesn't matter. In fact, and I started late. But unfortunately, I had an amazing editor, Alejandro Arbona. And he told me, man, this is totally acceptable because you're the young and you don't know how the things work here in Marvel. So take it easy. And don't you worry. And somehow he recognized my talent and my wish to work for Marvel. And I got second chance, and that was the Red Skull. And the Red Skull was the top one back in 2011 for Marvel for a couple months. After that, everything is just history, I guess.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it was great that you had a cool editor, and I do think, I mean, everyone does have the moments where they do make a mistake or they do can miss something, but as long as that's the odd situation and not the norm, that, you know, I think everyone can recognize that there are mistakes, you know, and there's going to be problems in a while, but I do think, as you said, it is the professional who does go, that will not be the norm.
Yeah, if you don't make mistake, how to learn something? I think I wish I had more mistakes. You know,
that's an odd desire.
Yeah. So you know, that's very simple. You get a chance to work what you dream about, and you got the chance, and you blew it up. I mean, I really understand. I don't understand that. I mean, I know so many artists who you know dreamed about to become a comic artist. When they get a chance, they blew it. I don't know. I really understand that. I mean, maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm too old for this shit. But who knows?
I mean, I get it. I mean, as a writer, I've been on a project. I was being paid for, and you know, I worked on it for a while, and I tried to do my best with what the publisher wanted with the comic book, and I realized after it was almost 3 weeks that, but I realized we were not on the same page or not, and we didn't have the same vision for it. And like I said, I think I did the professional thing. I told him, you know what, this isn't for me. You know, keep the money, keep the pages, keep the money, and I walked away. But at least you should do the adult thing and say, I'm done, or you're not. This is not for me. Instead of prolonging things. You know, I think that's also an important thing to do. You know, if you're going to step back. Or if you're gonna dive in completely, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a situation with Marvel. I accepted some gig with DC Comics. I was working with Green Lantern, and suddenly I received the email from the editor, and he asked me if I can jump in the wagon with the, not Star Trek. And I forgot Star Wars, man.
Star Wars. Okay, very cool.
It was like, oh wow, it's such an honor to work with on Star Wars. But you know, I had already, I said, unfortunately, I can't. My friends, my family told me you're crazy. So what? I should expect that. I should accept that. And then what? To start too late or what? So no. If you sign a contract, if you make a deal with your editors, with your publisher, you have obligation to finish that job, and after that you have continue to look around for another gig. But
you know,
just like in the life, you know, the best opportunity suddenly comes, and you know, I who knows why is that good? You know, maybe I will not work with Todd today. That I was accepted to work on the Star Wars. Who knows? I mean,
yeah,
really.
I'm gonna say I think the most important thing for anyone is you have honor and your word. The only thing you can ever hold and I think really keep is your word on things, and that's what you should be always held to. And once you lose, I think once people realize you can't keep your word on something, nothing you do after that has value, because you can't be trusted to keep on a project. You can't be trusted to follow through on things. I think once you lose that, you do lose your profession. You lose yourself a little bit as well.
I know. Yeah, absolutely. It's very, very, very hard to find any job after that. I don't want to mention any names, but I know a lot of people, you know, who did and who still does the great and amazing piece of artwork, but because of the, you know, short deadlines, they started too late, and they never get another opportunity to work with the biggest publisher. You know, if you work for the small publisher, even in Serbia, you can't live. You can't own enough money to live, even in Serbia. So, the point is, in the bottom line, you have to work with the biggest publisher on the world if you can, and if you plan to live good.
Yeah, I mean, especially in comic books, it's a very small community. The world of comic books is such a small community that things get around immediately. You know, everyone knows who you can't work with. Everyone knows who you can work with. And like I said, it gets around. It's too small of a community for it not to get around.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the problem is everybody knows that. We just think that don't talk on the coffee, don't speak to each other, but it's not true. They are very friendly, and they are walking around the New York, you know, together.
Yeah.
And that's a normal thing. But, you know, the thing is, you know, here in Europe, especially in Serbia, the guys here think that about the comic book industry and in America, like, it's such a large community. I said, no, it's like 1 or 2% of whole America basically likes the comics.
Yeah.
Which is true. If you take a look how many issues of the Spider-Man are sold,
yeah,
it basically means that it's like 2% of people in America buy the comics.
Yeah, know? I mean, a comic book that sells 60,000 copies in a country of 330 million, that's a very small percentage.
Yeah, right. That's very, but the other hand, you know, Marvel have a very good approach with the movies, you know, and somehow they managed to push the comics even further because of the new brand new movies.
Yeah.
I had a pleasure to visit Marvel Studios in New York. And I realize that, you know, they're very clever and they know exactly what they are doing. Of course, everyone makes mistakes, but also may make mistakes. But so far, with my man CB Cebulski, who is my friend,
yeah,
he's the main guy right now in Marvel. And I have to say, CB, if you're listening, you're doing your job very well. He made America great again.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I mean that's true with Marvel. And by the way, if CB Cebulski or Tommy Farrell want to come on the show, that's fantastic with us. So we'll open that invitation right now. And if you want to help us make a connection, please do. But I've had debates with a lot of people in the comic book world about the movies, and I've always stood firm on the idea that the movies do help the industry, comic book industry, that whether or not you realize it or not, by either helping to fund the comic book industry or by bringing people to the comic book industry, they do help a lot, and especially what Marvel's doing. Some people disagree but I think they do.
Yeah, absolutely. Somehow I think, you know, the comics and the movies are together simple stronger, especially on the part where the comic is. You know, an example from Serbia, you know, everybody knows from, not because of the comics, but because of the movies. And then they start to buy the comics here in Serbia, like a Thor, like a Avengers, like a X-Men, like a Wolverine. So basically, the comic book industry right now is very well supported by the movies.
Yep. And,
absolutely.
And I mean, when you think about it, like you said earlier, if 2% of...
I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Hey, man.
Hey, I would say if 2% of the industry is buying comic books right now, and you can bring 1% of the movie watchers to comic books, you increase your readership by 50%. That's a huge number, and it doesn't take much.
I agree with
you 100% on that. Just for we're pushing about an hour, so I just want to go back just a little bit on McFarlane. I have two questions left for you on the McFarlane thing, and then the first one being, so how far along are you in the series? Are you complete the first issue? Are you on the second issue?
Oh, no. We just started. We just started like 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
2 weeks ago. I did first 12 pages. And Todd is, right now, Todd has, he's, how to say that, he has a different kind of the work to do right now. But this coming week, I will become his number one project. It's kind of slow, but for me right now, after all this corona shit virus and lockdowns we have here and the curfews, this pace. I did 12 pages, and next week, like I told you, we'll come back from the traveling across America, and we'll start to work, I think, with a much faster pace.
So I know it's a very secret project, but are you able to share with me the title of the series?
Yes, Here Comes the Sun.
That's the Here Comes the Suns. Very cool. Here Comes the Suns.
Yeah. And that's the name of the title. It's not a super secret, but that's all I can say now. It will be pretty shocking. It will be pretty shocking for the comic book industry, especially because Todd knows how to write things. And he knows how the artists thinks about approaching to the different kind of stories, and he knows, he's a guru, like I said. He knows everything.
Yeah. Now
he knows that.
When can your fans expect to see some pages from the series?
Very soon. As soon as I get the green light, I will post some pages or some panels. I don't think so. I would post, let's say I can post the whole page, but I will post some panels examples from the pages, and I'm sure it will be ready soon. I already posted some pencils, like maybe two or three on Twitter, and I got a lot of messages, private messages in my inbox, like, oh, what is this? It looks nice. So yeah, I'm trying to post as soon as possible what I did now with the talk, but I'm waiting basically, you know, to get the green light, and that's it. Nothing more. I think you should be following your Twitter, and you will see everything there.
Well, I really can't wait to see it. I'm very excited. Once again, I'm a huge Todd McFarlane fan. I've been reading Spawn consistently, so I would love to see what he does next. Your art is phenomenal. So I must admit, I'm eagerly anticipating seeing more of it.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you. You will be surprised. Trust me.
I definitely think I will be. Thank you so much, man. You are fantastic. I really appreciate you giving your time to me, and I can't wait to read Here Comes the Suns.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you, man. I'm glad to hear. I'm glad to spoke with you.
You're absolutely phenomenal. Like,
and we're back. That was a lot of fun. Mirko's got some stuff coming up with over at Image with Todd McFarlane, and it's pretty cool. You should just Google it, and you'll see some pretty cool stuff. Thanks so much, Mirko, for coming on. This was really a lot of fun. Jeff had fun. I really enjoyed listening to it, and hope to have you come back on sometime. So without further ado, let's wrap this up. That's got actual real work to do today. So as always, you can check us out on any podcatcher. Just look for Spoiler Country. You can go to spoilerverse.com and check out our show and all the other shows we have on the network, as well as articles and reviews and previews and more fun stuff like that. And, go to the store link, pick up a t-shirt, pick up a hoodie, pick up something. Helps us here, keep the lights on. You know, we do all this out of our own pocket and just for fun. We love this so much. It's a lot of fun to do. We wouldn't do this if we didn't love it. But helping pay the bills is pretty awesome, too. Well, you know, that's a show, guys. And there's just one more thing to do.
And that is,
in oceans of podcasts, we are Cthulhu. And as Cthulhu compels you to do, open your mind and read more.